chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with the pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable.
They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in. It is the Hoist the Colors podcast, back at our usual time, Sunday night. It is March 10th. The Pirates of East Carolina are fresh off a road sweep, a well-earned, hard-nosed road sweep over Liberty. The Flames tried to spoil the party pretty much every day. We'll get into the series. I thought ECU really had to find different ways to win all three games. They did that. ACC podcast, as always, Steve and I go here. Hosting Scott Lohrbacher, Jonathan Wagner are alongside. And gentlemen, we always open with our general thoughts on the series. We'll go around the horn here. We already got like 15 comments and we're just starting. So, of course, we'll get into that. As always, drop your comments, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, if you're watching, and we'll get to them throughout the show. But we'll start with Scott. ECU sweeps Liberty, 3-0 week. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I thought it was a gritty series win. I thought it was a gritty win today. You know, kind of battled through a little bit today. Friday night got easy in the late innings, but was far from a walk in the park. So three wins against a team that, you know, Liberty has played a tough schedule. And they've lost 10 games. But I think they're a better team than maybe they look like just straight off of record. So we'll see how they do the rest of the year. They were picked to finish second in Conference USA. The guy who started for them today was a all-Conference USA pitcher. But great to get three wins. Hated that we couldn't play at least one of the midweek games. But back in the winning tally mark. So
back in the winning tally marks.
Right, back in the winning tally marks.
I think we should just start rolling with that every time the Pirates get a winning week. Back in the winning tally marks, hey. Wags, what do you think? Back in the winning tally mark? God, I can't even say it. back in the winning tally marks, big weekend for the Pirates.
Yeah, we're definitely back in the winning tally marks, so that's for sure. But, you know, I thought it was a good weekend. I'm coming away from it feeling really good. They found different ways to win. You know, Friday you dominated in the middle innings, I thought, and then, you know, outside of the ninth inning and just one guy in the bullpen – not pitching well. I think the bullpen as a whole really stepped up this weekend, which was nice to see. Danny Beal came back and was Danny Beal that we come to know and love. And that was a very welcome sight. So all around, I think bullpen was good. Starting pitching was not as good as it has been, specifically with Yusavage and Root. Yusavage was good. Root wasn't at his best, but I still don't think he had a bad outing by any takes. So good weekend all around, and I agree. Liberty's a better team than what the record shows. And yeah.
Yeah, winning tally marks, baby. East Carolina again. Yeah, I mean, I like it. You know, Friday, really the only guy who gave up runs and struggled out of the bullpen, and not to throw him under the bus, because I didn't think he pitched that bad, was the freshman, Corey Costello. Like, he gave up an infield hit, and then I just think he got squeezed a little bit, walked a couple guys, and then I think just didn't handle it well. But you know, you throw those guys in that situation to continue to grow. But we saw several guys bounce back. Like you said, the, you know, the starting pitching, we all knew they're not going to go out there and throw 7-8 shutout innings every weekend. And so, you know, Root and Yesavage did their job, and then the bullpen was great. Offense had some timely hitting and well put together innings to mount some runs. Not a huge offensive weekend, but it also was very cold and windy and didn't look like a very fun weekend to hit. So ECU's offense did enough, and pretty clean defense, guys, for the most part throughout the weekend, which was a positive as well. All right, we got a lot of comments already we'll get into. And, you know, we'll go ahead and address it, by the way. Our bold predictions, mine fell flat. I predicted Riley Johnson would hit for the cycle. Now, I did expect VCU, and it was a cycle over the entire week, so not in one game. But I think he had one or two hits. So Riley Johnson did not hit for the cycle this week. I expected the five-game week. Didn't happen. Wags, you went with the Colby Wallace pitching prediction, which came untrue, correct?
Yes, I'm putting an asterisk next to that because I had no chance unless we played two midweek games, and that didn't happen. So I was set up to lose from the start.
And we did have one man who went outside the box, went with a non-ECU bowl prediction, which is fair game, and he hit in multiple ways. Scott, let's hear your bragging rights here.
Yeah, I was in the winning tally marks on Saturday afternoon after TCU's second loss to Kansas, and picked up another one today after Wake Forest lost to Duke in their series. So that wasn't the one that I wanted to happen necessarily, because I do think we'll see Duke's meteoric rise in the top 25 tomorrow morning.
Yeah, we'll get into the top 25. So, again, doing this show on Sunday nights, I just realized we've got 160 people watching, guys. So, like, I didn't know our numbers were that high, but that's pretty good. We went to Sunday nights for viewership purposes, and I feel like that is definitely paid off. We went Monday night last week because the fantasy draft, you know, fantasy baseball comes first, right, Wax? And so always. We did that and had to get a good draft in. But now we're back on Sunday nights, and we don't know when the poll – you know, we used to have the show Monday nights, so we'd have the poll. Now we don't have the poll, so we kind of speculate. So we'll get into that in a little bit. I do see a comment already that I have to address. I meant to bring this up at the start. Skull Pirate says, Igo always loves talking negatively about umpires. We got to get Igo behind the plate. Look, I'm not saying their job is easy. I've got friends who are umpires. I've got friends who are college basketball referees, but – College baseball umpiring, and specifically college baseball balls and strikes, are just horrifically inconsistent, and it drives me insane. Like, today's zone guys made zero sense really all weekend. I've spoken on ad nauseum, so it pisses me off, but it is what it is. It's terrible. I don't know if y'all have anything to add.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just because we're in the American. I know – during our football games, it seems like we get the worst of the worst referees. But in a game between number 1 and number 12 today, Chris Pollard got thrown out for Duke because the strike zone was atrocious. I mean, and I think this is where college baseball can kind of lead the way, is let's go full-on robot umpires. The technology's there. Most of the schools have it now. Now, granted, the Southland Conference, the Big South, like some of these smaller, less funded conferences may not have the ability to do that. But maybe that allows for some of these umpires to go there and work those games instead of our games. But I do think that if there's anywhere it makes sense to have robotic umpires, it's college baseball. When you have 320-something teams playing games every weekend, it's just not feasible to have 160 quality umpires behind the plate every single weekend. It just not happen.
Yeah, you know, and Wags, we were texting throughout today's game and this weekend with our group chat, and there was a point in the seventh, eighth inning where, like, ECU legitimately had to throw four strikes per at bat because Kaler and Danny Bill were getting squeezed, and it was more than obvious. And I don't know if this had anything to do with the fact that Cliff Godwin got upset earlier in the game about a particular call. And look, I mean, umpires are human. They try their best not to be biased or whatever. I'm not saying this guy was biased against ECU because Cliff got mad, but you know, they're human. At the end of the day, humans have emotions. They can be biased. If you go robots, as lame as it sounds, you take the unbiased, or you take the bias out of it, and everything is unbiased and should be fair. At some point, it's common. It sucks because nobody wants to have an umpire that's a robot, but it would make the games a lot more fair and accurate. So I don't know, Wags, what did you think of the umpire this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you said it best. It was just inconsistent. That's the best way to put it. You know, some days it's good as a whole, I think. And I'll start off, I've been one that I've always been against the robotic umpires until this year, I think. Just
until
because
today.
Until today. And it's not just ECU. I watch a lot of college baseball, and it's so bad everywhere. And I think in the minor leagues last year or a couple years ago, I think they implemented something to where, and I could be just talking out of my butt right here, so just tell me if I am, but if a call comes in, a batter takes a ball or a strike that he thinks is a ball, you know, you just immediately challenge it. It was a lower minor league team. And I think just that sort of technology, if you're not going to go full robotic arms, just something like that, implement that. And again, does every school have the technology for that? No, they don't. But I think something's got to give, because you look at Friday night, and Corey Costello, freshman, coming in, and Cliff Godwin said after the game, he got squeezed, and he did. Was he commanding? Great. No, I don't think so. But at the same time, when, like Igo said earlier, you're having to throw four or five strikes in an at-bat to get a guy out, then especially for a freshman, that can kill his confidence. And for freshman pitchers in college baseball, that could be it. So it does matter. It does need to be fixed. I don't know what the answer is, but at the very least, I want them to start trying something, because I think you have to.
Speaking of robots, we've got 245 viewers. I'm wondering how many of them are bots. just based off the fact we're mentioning robots. I looked it up on Twitter. We've got 190 of them viewing on Twitter. I feel like all those bots that tweeted us basically about porn after every tweet are tuned into the podcast now. So thanks for watching us, bots. So Saber's Edge Pressure Washing wants to know, the amount of money the umpires get paid to make these horrible calls would piss a lot of people off. Let us know, Saber, so I can get even more mad. I'm already mad, and I want to get more mad. A lot of stuff here about umpires. If the ball is in the batter's box, Adam McMunn says it's not a strike. Seems rather simple. Yeah, there are too many pitches off the plate outside that skim not even close to the plate, but skim the white part of the other batter's box, that should not be a strike. It's just not even close. A lot of stuff about the umpires. Let's get back to ECU baseball. Who told the grounds crew not to put the tarp out Sunday night? JPN 1212. Scott, you said you did?
I did, yeah. Needed a rain delay.
Yeah, you said you didn't want a you wanted an undefeated midweek, and it came true. And look, I don't know the full story. Cliff Godwin was on Monday's Inside Pirate Athletics, did say that, you know, the weather didn't really call for rain or much rain at all. And Sunday night into Monday, it rained, and they worked all day Tuesday trying to fix the tarp, or trying to fix the infield, excuse me, and it just wasn't playable all day Monday into Tuesday. So it was one of those deals. You don't want to ruin the field just for one midweek game. And then Wednesday, of course, it rained. It's unfortunate. Crap happens. And I don't know, guys. I mean, it's not ideal to play VCU right after Duke late in the season. But ECU was not trying to dodge the game. So let's get that out of the way. Those takes are just ridiculous. We really think East Carolina is scared to play Virginia Commonwealth at home. I know they're a solid program, but those takes have got to stop. And I will not accept them.
It's so stupid. I'm sorry. I'm not going to hold back there. But if you think that, then I don't know what you're on. Because if we're ECU, and this is a team that wants to make it to Omaha, make it to the College World Series, if you're scared of a Tuesday, Wednesday two-game set against VCU, then what the heck are we doing here playing? I mean, it's ridiculous. And Cliff Godwin came in. He said, I think it was Friday, his pregame interview on 94.3 before the game. And he pretty much, like, we're not dodging VCU. It's stupid. Did it benefit ECU not playing those games? Probably. Absolutely it did, because you didn't have to tax a bullpen and everyone was fresh going in. But they didn't intentionally say, we're not going to tarp the field and get out of playing this game knowing rain's coming on Wednesday too. Because guess what? If it didn't rain on Wednesday, they would have played at least one. So it's ridiculous. Stop it. I understand that five games in a week is not ideal necessarily, but come on.
Scott, where do you fall on the conspiracy theory scale of ECU did not want to play VCU?
If we were scared to play people, we wouldn't play at Campbell. We wouldn't play at ODU. We wouldn't play at Wilmington. We wouldn't go to Elon. We would just play A&T and Queens College and whoever else NC State plays on Tuesday nights that they beat 14-2 that just have no pitching. If we were scared to play people. I mean, it's just an unfortunate event. You don't want to risk injury playing on a sloppy field 12 games into the season. It does not make sense. Doesn't make sense for VCU, who I'm sure has aspirations to win the A-10 and make it back to the tournament. Doesn't make sense for ECU. It stinks that they got all the way down to Greenville before we could make that call. But we'll play them again later in the year. Hopefully we can find another game to squeeze in somewhere, just to get to that 56 game mark. I don't know when or where that might happen. It may be difficult to do that, but, we'll see how it goes. But, VCU would typically be a top 100 RPI opponent. So it's not a game that you necessarily want to lose or try to replace with an extra game against Columbia this weekend or anything like that.
Golf Yoda says five games in back-to-back weeks with a weak bullpen is not as absurd as y'all are making it out to be. So, Yoda, are you suggesting that ECU skipped out and did not want to play VCU? Well, now you're just making it so you got five game weeks later in the season against tougher opponents. So,
and guess what? Until you start using that bullpen and giving guys more opportunities to get into those roles, they're never going to find them.
And it's not five games in back-to-back weeks if you don't have five games a week.
Yoda, love you, man, but stick to Star Wars and golf. But thanks for tuning in and being a non-bot viewer. All right. Let's see here. Adam says, if all the midweek games get rained out, we will only have six losses on the season. That is correct. So JPN says, question, why are we playing such a poor quality team this week at home if we are going to play a Columbia-type team? It needs to be on the road. It does nothing for our RPI. So Columbia is typically a pretty solid program, although they're in the Ivy League. They're not going to be a tremendous RPI team, but they've been in regionals. They're typically towards the top of the league. And, you look at it, the schedule on paper, when you make it out probably a few years in advance, you got UNC and you got Liberty on the road. I mean, those are two perennial regional teams. When Liberty's at its best, is typically a three seed in a regional. UNC is a top 15 team. I don't have a problem with the Columbia series on paper. You know, could you make an argument you want another tough weekend with the conference? Yes, but where do you come down on this, Scott, with where Columbia falls on the schedule?
Yeah, I think the total 56 game schedule itself I'm perfectly fine with, including the Columbia series. I could also see the argument of playing a Columbia-type team, you know, the first couple Tuesdays and changing that three-game series to a Campbell or Old Dominion or, you know, a top 50 to 75 RPI team. I think that there's some value there too, especially, you know, getting wins against those teams over a weekend where it kind of favors us a little bit more than maybe the midweeks do. Columbia is 3-7, but if you look at who their losses are to, right, they went to Florida and lost a few games. They went out to the West Coast and they played Irvine, who's really good. I mean, they gave up 80 runs this weekend. I'm not trying to say Columbia is good, but after they play us, they get into conference play, which I think they'll do well in. They're still around 150 RPI team. They start winning in conference play, even though they're playing bad teams. So they could end up to that edge of Q3 type team. So hopefully they can stay in Q3 give us three wins over a Q3 opponent, which is not obviously not great, but better than Q4. So I don't hate it, especially right before conference play. But if our conference isn't going to improve, then I think we do have to use that last weekend to get one last really quality opponent in.
Looks like so the last 2 years you look at it, they were 133 in RPI last year, and they were 38 in RPI in 2022. So, like, historically speaking, they're a pretty good opponent. I mean, that's a better RPI, 133, than what half of the American last year.
Yeah.
So hopefully I think with the schedule, as long as they do well in the Ivy League, they should be a pretty, like you said, pretty good RPI team. All right. Golf Yoda says, Columbia is a perennial staple in the NCAA tournament's 4 seed, far from a poor quality team. Sarcasm. Golf, I can't tell, like, is he being serious here? Because what he said is correct, but. Hey, Columbia whooped ECU's ass in the Coral Gables regional. I was there when they hit a home run on, like, the game's first pitch against Evan Krasinski. So, don't sleep on the Lions. Cruz remembers. All right, let's get into the discussion about the poll. We haven't really talked about actual ECU baseball at all this weekend. We'll do that before we wrap up. Duke will jump ECU in the polls this week after taking 2 of 3 from Wake Forest. Adam McNunn says, heck of a win for Duke. So, yeah, we got some questions on poll projections. ECU sweeps, they're number 11. They have not really moved up or down. Thoughts, guys? We'll start with Wags and then get Scott's take on any idea where the polls, the rankings will sit tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting, you know, watching Duke Wake at the end and trying to figure out, you know, where is it going to fall. And I think the difference between if Duke wins the series and if Wake wins the series, it does mean a lot for ECU in the polls, just because now ECU is going to drop a spot. Should they? Probably not. If you ask me, then a team like Florida, who struggled over the last couple of weeks, should probably fall out of that top 11. But I just don't see them dropping that far after, even after a 2-2 week. But I don't see it. And TCU, they lost a series at Kansas, but can't. TCU was undefeated going into the week. Again, I see them dropping to 10. That's why I had them in my predictions. But again, if you're asking me where should ECU be in the rankings tomorrow, that's a completely different question than where I think they will be. And I just think ECU will drop a spot to 12. And it's not just ECU dropping. I think Clemson falls from 10 to 11 as well, just because I do think TCU stays in that top 10. But now we're getting to that part where, you know, I think this upcoming weekend, not this upcoming weekend, but the weekend after, every conference will be in conference play, I believe. So that's going to be where the real movement starts. You know, this week we're going to see some movement throughout the top 25, I think. I don't think we're going to have any new teams this week. But from top to bottom, I think the teams that are in it are going to move around a little bit, probably the most that we've seen so far. But just because I do think the strength of the top 10 is really strong, and I just don't see anybody falling far enough below ECU, and I think Duke's going to go up into that top 5, and Wake is going to stay in the top 5 as well. So it's tough, it's tight, but it's unfortunate. And the margin of error for ECU does get really thin, like I said, just because I do think it is a really strong top end of the country.
Yeah, I don't want to start freaking out about the host thing, but it is kind of worrisome that you've got so many strong teams in the Carolinas. I just feel like ECU's margin for error this season is going to be tough if the committee worries about regionalization and their hosting, because, I mean, you got so many teams, guys. But thoughts on the top 25, Scott? Do you see ECU moving or staying?
Yeah, I have us dropping back a spot as well. I have Duke moving up to 3. I think that's a really impressive series win. I think people will take notice of that. You know, going into the season, Wake was kind of a consensus number 1. But like Wag said, starting next week, really, there'll be a lot more movement. You got Wake Forest plays Virginia, Florida plays A&M, Tennessee and Alabama play, Vandy and Auburn. Clemson plays at Duke. So, you know, if Duke stays hot, beats Clemson, we'll get that spot back there. And, you know, that's 6 teams against teams that'll probably all be in the top 20. So we'll see a lot more movement. Going into this weekend, top 10 teams were 30-0 on weekend series. I guess Florida technically lost 1 because they only played 1 game, so 29-1. But yeah, I think it's a little too early to worry about where ECU is in the polls, just because most of the teams ahead of us don't really start playing quality competition until they get to conference play, which is understandable when you're playing top 25 and top 15 teams every week in the SEC and ACC, whereas our schedule lightens up once we get in the conference play for the most part.
Yeah, somebody commented earlier that UNC, ECU has handed UNC its only two losses to this point. And that is the one thing, guys, that I feel like is keeping ECU and will keep ECU, as long as they continue to play well, like right in that top 10-ish range just outside. Because if UNC continues to do well and ECU continues to do well, the Tar Heels should not jump the Pirates, well, unless it's Carolina curveball, you know, which shout out to Case or Maley. But come on, guys, got to get that fixed. But ECU's got a head-to-head series win with them, so that will hold a lot of weight. As much as it pains ECU fans probably to pull for UNC, the better UNC does, as long as ECU does well, I think the better it looks for ECU due to the lack of, you know, marquee weekend series on paper. And let's see here. We have yeah, by the way, Wags, you did freeze up a minute ago.
Oh, God. not again.
JPN 1212 wants to know, will Wags freeze at 9:50 this week? I would say there's a 50-50 chance.
I'll put the over-under time-wise at 9:57. I think it was 9:52 the first week and 9:56 last week. Maybe that was flipped, but I tried different stuff. I let my computer rest up for about 30 minutes before. I kept my office door open today. So, you know, for those of you who were last year, Scott won't be showing up through the door if I don't like and subscribe to the podcast. So,
Skull Pirate has said, kick this guy off the podcast. If he freezes again, put some effort into the podcast equipment or else. Well, technically, he kicks himself off the podcast every time he freezes.
No, that's not true, actually. I stay there frozen looking at the screen like an idiot until you kick me out, and then I join back in.
That is true. Kaysen has responded. He's always lurking. Carolina curveball. This guy, new rankings tomorrow. Where will the Pirates be? I don't know, Kaysen. You'll probably have Wofford jump them tomorrow.
Upstate. USC Upstate. Big three-game sweep this weekend. So
ECU is ranked 9th in the Carolina curveball rankings and 11th in the country.
Probably gonna, what are we doing? College coming up.
Love you, Kaysen. All right, let's see here. Man, we got a lot of comments. The bots are rolling in. We're up to 425 viewers. There's no way all these people are real.
Well, if you're real, like the screen, the stream.
Yeah. Please go to HTC. I think it's Hoist the Colors or HTC 247. And give us a like, subscribe, and add to our winning tally marks here on the Hoist the Colors podcast. All right, Johnny Robertson says, dating back to last season, the Pirates have now won three consecutive three-game road series for the first time since 2004. Is that legit?
Is that non-conference? Because I feel like
– I feel like there's got to be a season where ECU has won three consecutive road. Are we saying swept or just one?
Because we had like 3 years in a row that we went 20-4 in conference play.
That's got to be non-conference, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us know, Johnny. I mean, Johnny is Mr. Stat. He may be on it.
I trust him more than myself, so.
That is true. Moronic Monday says, I hit the like button just for you to see him. I feel like that guy's a bot. But he does have a pirate. He's got the is that the avatar from God, what's that show? I watch it with my kids sometimes. I can't even think of the name. The Backyardigans. Yes. Maybe not. I don't know. Johnny Robertson says, swept any three-game road series, so sweep. Okay. Sabres Edge pressurizing says Kaysen is a bot and that Kaysen needs a new job, according to Skull Pirate. So, yeah.
Tough world.
We've said too many buzzwords. I go start saying SI or, gosh, I can't even talk. I'm a bot. Maybe I'm a bot. I go start said AI randomly throughout the rest of the podcast. I bet we get the viewers up to 1,000. Yeah, I mean, if we talk about bots and robots and AI, I'm just going to keep those words on repeat, and we may get to 1,000 viewers. But this is the hottest show we've ever had. Sweeping Liberty. It's what does it. Let's talk about the bullpen guys and the Pirates. Double dealing Danny Bill. Chuck says It was good to see Danny Bill be Danny Bill the last 2 days, landing his off speed, getting ahead. Again, he had to throw four strikes per some of the at-bats today, but that's a huge development for this team. And I don't think any of us really doubted that Danny Bill would find it, Wags. It was just a matter of when.
Yeah, I mean, Danny looked really good. And I think it's important because, you know, Wyatt Luntrer-Chinkman has kind of become your most trusted guy in the bullpen. And I think for a couple weeks stretch, he was your only trusted guy out of the bullpen, really. And so it's very welcome development to see Danny Beal. And I think Jaden Winter looked good this weekend as well. Eric Ritchie looked good today. And Aaron Grohler looked good. The list goes on. I think everyone pretty much pitched well. And for Danny, it's, again, we know what he's capable of. We've seen it for so long. And to have the success that ECU wants to have this season, they're going to need Danny Beal. So him coming out, and you can, again, we can look at Liberty and you can look at their team and say they won five games, but I thought their offense, they had some dudes in that lineup, and their averages might not show it, but I was impressed by a lot of their guys. So I do think Liberty is a lot better, their lineup specifically, than what you might see on paper. And I think Danny did good. Again, four strikes in that bat is even harder, but Danny came in, he got the win on Saturday, and he got the save today. So, you know, that's pretty much exactly how you draw it up. And he came in, he gave you a couple innings both times. So really good stuff, really welcome sight. And again, you need Danny Beal to go this season. It'd be nice to get a couple more guys so you can kind of ease them into those roles late in the game. But yeah, really impressed by Danny Beal. And man, I'm excited because if he can get going again, then this bullpen, I think, is going to get a lot better just with him himself.
Golf Yoda says, I thought we pulled Richie too early, but Bill did well. It is what it is. So we were texting about this, Wags, and I actually thought it, and you too thought it was the right move. And Scott, you can weigh in here too. But like, Richie has been up and down. He came in and he looked great, but we do know at times like he will lack command. I mean, that's kind of the thing with him. He's got great stuff. So if he sits, comes back out, walks dudes, then obviously you get in a bind. So I thought it was the right thing. See him have some success and, you know, then go build off of it rather than send him back out and, you know, have to start from scratch again. What do you think about that, Wax?
Yeah, I think I talked about this last week a little bit with Richie, but I think I personally, and again, I'm not the pitching coach. I'm not Cliff Godwin. I'll start with that. I'm not Cliff Godwin.
Wait, you're not?
I thought it was Austin Knight.
But with Richie, I think his role that I would have him in is more of a lefty specialist. You know, the A.J. Wilson type from a couple years ago. Come in, get a lefty batter out, got great off-speed. Off-speed that works a lot better against lefties because if you leave it hanging against a righty, it just with the amount that ball kind of arches and comes down, then it becomes really dangerous, and you've got to be almost perfect with it. So, you know, Richie came in, got two batters, I think, today, and he looked really good. And Cliff Godwin clearly trusts Eric Richie to be a guy in this bullpen moving forward. He's going to keep pitching. And even though, you know, we might disagree, and I'm not going to pull myself out of that group because I know when Eric Richie comes in, I am vocal in the group chat, and I'm like, all right, give him this batter, and then it's time to go to the bullpen for the next guy. But, you know, he proved me wrong this weekend. And it's good because, again, you're going to need guys, and especially I think you're going to need lefty guys to step up in the bullpen moving forward. But good performance. But, again, everyone pitched well for the most part. So it was nice to see, and I'm glad he proved me wrong. I'll say that.
And, Scott, I think you said after the Campbell game or whenever it was, you know, they got to put the guys in the right situations to have success. And, you know, he's pitching to – by the way, Nip has hit like eight – it feels like 85 home runs already for Campbell. That dude's a beast. Every time I get on Twitter, Carolina Curveball is tweeting about him hitting a home run. But, you know, you've got guys now with Richie and Aaron Grohler, and we'll see with Costello and some of the other lefties, Ethan Norby. Like, you kind of have some matchup lefties, which I like. So we've said it all along, Scott, there's pieces there. Now that they're starting to perform, you're starting to see maybe the bullpen come together.
Yeah, we had seven different guys make appearances, and they had nine appearances of zero runs between those seven guys. The only guy that gave up runs was Costello. And even with him, I think that's the right situation for him, even though he wasn't successful, because it was such a low-pressure situation. Typically, you don't see an umpire start to squeeze the zone in an eight-run game in the ninth inning. most people are ready to go home. I guess he wasn't. But yeah, I mean, I thought the bullpen was great. And as far as Richie, he got the two outs. I'm trying to remember who led off the eighth for Liberty, but I don't think it was a lefty bat. So you bring in Bill, and at that point, Bill can take you the rest of the way if he pitches well. And it's still a very close game. And then on the other side of that, I thought our offense did a lot of good work this weekend in late innings, providing those insurance runs so that our relief pitchers could pitch a little more freely than, you know, maybe in the past few weekends.
Garfield says Richie to me is a hot hand kind of guy. I agree he's inconsistent, but when he's on, he's on. That game he pitched against USF last year in their Clearwater AAC tournament was beyond special. I agree. Like when he's throwing his fastball for strikes, I mean the curveball plays so much better. So it starts with command for him. He's definitely got the stuff. All right, next comment here. Golf Yoda says, good point, Scott. The leadoff batter in the eighth for Liberty was a righty. So well done, Mr. Joey Votto. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're getting a lot of questions about Tuesday pitching. And at this point, I don't know. I would assume Ethan Norby. We'll make our predictions later. I mean, it'll be a staff day either way, right, guys?
I think it's got to be. I mean, you can't – I mean, Chris Kaler pitched today, so I don't see him turning around and starting on Tuesday, even though I'm sure he'll be available. But, yeah, I'd be surprised if it's not Norby, but it's going to be one of those things, like I think Old Dominion, where Norby starts with the expectation that he gives you an inning or two, and then you just turn it to whoever's next, and you're going to have a lot of guys who are up next.
Yeah, Skull says, did we ever beat UNCW midweek? Last year, they swept ECU. ECU is historically, you know, they've won in Wilmington, but it's just it feels like those games are always ugly. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the backdrop there because they got that giant Seahawk in center field or what, but the games are always just weird. So we'll see. I do think you'll see Norby. I do think you'll see Kaler come back and pitch. I don't know if he'll start, but he did throw a third, one and one third innings today. It'll be a lot of guys. We haven't seen Drew Bryan in a while.
Groller and probably get some.
Who's that?
Groller.
Yeah, Groller. DiLorenzo, definitely. So.
What about Groller starting on Tuesday? He threw four pitches on Friday.
I wouldn't hate it. I think he'd be a good fit against a lineup like UNCW, honestly.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on how many lefties do they have at the top of the order.
Yeah.
You know, just from a matchup perspective. But, you know, he's looked good against righties, too. He's not just a matchup guy, so we'll see. Cliff can't coach midweeks. I'll die on that hill, according to Skull Pirate. So we'll see if he can find a way to win a midweek this week. And Pirates, they'll need some midweek wins because the schedule lightens up. We haven't really talked, guys, about Wyatt Lunsford-Schenkman specifically a whole lot, and I feel like we need to because the law firm, as you call them, Scott, is an absolute stud. 3 1/3 innings over his Friday and Saturday appearances, 7 Ks against 1 walk, and over his last 3 outings – you know, really 4 if you look at the ODU game. He gave a fluke home run. Over his last 4 outings, 18 strikeouts, 1 walk. And I'm trying to do the math here. 4.2 plus 5 over 9 2/3 innings. So he has been absolute nails. And what can we say about Wyatt at this point, Scott?
Yeah, last Friday and Saturday he was the bullpen. And then again this weekend – he provided that link to get to the end of games. I think if the lead doesn't stretch on Friday, you see him really close that game out. Luckily for us, it did kind of get away from Liberty. But, I mean, if you were asking me who's the MVP of this team right now, he's on a very short list of guys that have really provided something that we were struggling to find early on and from anyone else. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of taken that Carter Spivey role, not quite as long of outings, but from Spivey's junior year where he was really just a fireman that came in anytime during the weekend and gave you what you needed.
And Wags, there's been a few comments that said, hey, Wyatt should start at UNCW or Wyatt should move into the weekend rotation. I think at this point he is in the perfect role. Like, I don't think you mess with that, and you can employ him basically any game during the week out of the bullpen, and he can go one, he can go four. I think he's in the perfect role. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's in the perfect role, and he's in the only role he should be. I think, you know, I understand the wanting to have a midweek guy like Wyatt Lunsford-Chankman, just because and midweeks are important. We saw last year, and we've talked about this to no ends, just we've seen what happens when you don't win your midweeks. But I still think I'd rather have Wyatt available by the end of those midweek games. Hopefully you're winning and you don't need him. But I'd rather have him available at the end of those games and then have him available for one, two, or, I mean, we know how this goes, maybe three times a weekend. So, and I think it's important too to look at, you know, when you get to conference play, and we were talking about this off air before we started a little bit, but, you know, the margin of error is very thin for ECU, and we talked about the top 25 earlier, but, you know, all these SEC and ACC teams ranked above ECU are going to be playing a lot better teams for the most part every weekend than ECU is on weekends. So you really get to win your weekends. A loss, a 2-1 series win for ECU over a weekend in the AAC is a lot different than a 2-1 series for, say, Vanderbilt in the SEC. And that's why I like having Wyatt there. And the bullpen has struggled this year up until this weekend. So I think if you take your best guy out of there, then it might stretch everyone else too thin. Jackson DiLorenzo has pitched well. Other guys have pitched well. Danny Beal pitched well this weekend. But I just think you're kind of playing with fire if you mess up what's working right now, especially with him. So, yeah, I think he's in a perfect role. And I think you'd be making a mistake if you move him to a midweek starter.
Golf Yoda says our midweek stud needs to be Jaden Winters. Jaden has looked really good the last few outings, which has been great to see. You know, again, getting ahead of guys, pounding the zone, challenging hitters. And we kind of discussed this. I don't think it's too early to pull the plug on, like, Jake Hunter being a Sunday guy. I mean, I think Jake Hunter has been fine. You know, I posted this as well. I think he's walked now 9 in – see, I got the stats here. Might as well – reference him. Yeah, 9 walks, guys, in 16 innings. Last year, he walked 13 in like 42 innings the entire season. So he's just walking too many guys. The stuff is better. If he's in the zone, I think he's a very capable starter. But what do we think about the Sunday role? Does Jaden Winters at some point deserve a look? Chris Kaler, or is it too early to really be looking at that?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Kaler, he's got that experience with George Washington where he's been a starter. So I think if you're Jake Hunter, you got to start looking over your shoulder and evaluating things. You know, I think he's had 3 walks and 3 starts. And then last week he didn't have a walk, but gave up a lot of hits and some hard hit balls. So, you know, because Root and Yesavage have pitched so well on Friday and Saturday, it's kind of more obvious when it doesn't go well on Sunday. So, you know, it's not saying that if Hunter isn't the Sunday guy, that the next guy who comes in is going to be a guy that can give you 5-6 innings. So I think we see what he does this weekend against Columbia. That's a team that he's going to be able to overpower, to you know, go out there and throw strikes against and get guys out. And if he can't throw strikes this weekend, then I think, you know, there's some hard conversations that maybe need to be had.
What is this? Donnie run pass Kirkpatrick says I go as my midweek stud. Well, thanks, Donnie. I appreciate you. Skull Pirate with a controversial take here, which is typical for Skull. I mean, he loves to be controversial. By the way, we're at 500 viewers. What is going on? I mean, apparently the AI worked. The AI talk is working. We'll just keep talking about bots. We got to mention the word bot every 10 minutes.
Maybe just because it's Liberty. Just the university that is Liberty just brings the bots.
Their search histories.
Hey, Liberty does like watching. I'm not even going to say it. Whatever.
What's in the bio?
Skull Pirate says, I feel very underwhelmed by this team based on the hype they had. Maybe I'm the only one. Skull, outside of the midweek games, what's gone wrong? I guess I'm waiting for him to answer, which he can't. But, I mean, he can answer in the chat, but not on the show. I don't know, Skull, let us know. But I think they're 10-4. Like, this road sweep kind of, I don't want to say makes up for, but at least takes some sting out of one of the midweek losses, maybe. Like, sweeping a series on the road kind of does that to an extent. I don't know. And you got a chance, somebody said earlier too, Scott, chance to rack up some wins this week. Columbia is a winnable series. And if you do win the midweek games going forward, some of them, I think you will have a lot of big win totals upcoming.
Yeah, and the midweeks we've had so far have been very good teams too. Like, let's not get it like confused that we're playing, you know, the Sisters of the Poor on Tuesday night. I mean, we've played a Campbell team that has really played well all year. Old Dominion is a quality program. They, you know, they've had big leaguers come out of that, out of their program. And then if you're looking at the Southeastern Louisiana loss, I mean, they gave LSU all they could handle on a Tuesday night this past week. So I think it's hard to say that you're underwhelmed when there's a team in UNC that their only two losses are to East Carolina. And they're up to 7 in the RPI. Now, if we're going forward, we keep going 7-4 over those 11-game stretches that Cliff talks about, I think then, yeah, you know, I think that's not good enough. And I think that would be underwhelming, and I don't think it would get us to a host spot. But it's too early in the year, and there's been too many bad weather days to be underwhelmed at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I had to look up Grant Nipp's numbers, by the way, just because I was curious. He's batting .450 with 11 home runs
already. That's pretty good.
Hey, what is going on?
And they've played a ton of top 25 teams. Like, it's not like they've played bad opponents.
And he's throwing like 97 out of the bullpen.
And they just got him off of Alabama's bench where he wasn't able to get on the field. So
good pickup for the Camels. All right. We got about 15 minutes left or so in the pod, and Russ says, I missed your comment. Russ, please drop it again, and I'll answer it this time. College Baseball Nation poll has been posted. Look, any poll that posts on Sunday night is not a real poll.
The games aren't even over. There's still games actively happening right now.
So get out of here. They have Duke second, ECU 11th, whatever that is worth. Somebody says similar stats from Grant Nipp to AMAC. Look, AMAC's hitting the ball, man. Good for him. I still say I want to see him face some real pitching. Does Boston College have real pitching? I just got a text from a source at Carolina Curveball. Not trying to poke the bear, but AMAC leads the country in RBI. Should we cancel the season because AMAC is having success with NC State?
Well, he can hit 84-mile-an-hour fastballs. I mean, that's what Towson was throwing the whole weekend. So, I mean, and then Boston College is – they were good last year on a couple guys that were from D3 that came up and could just throw strikes and Greg Maddux games, but they're not a good baseball program. Let's see what they do next weekend. Give it a week.
I'm ready for that game, man.
Me too.
He's probably going to hit a bomb off ECU and just...
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
He'll start switch hitting again out of nowhere. He's like, I'm healed. Now I'll do it.
He switch hit today.
Did he?
He hit a homer from the right side. I saw probably a tweet from Carolina Curveball.
I'm trying. I'm ready for... I don't know. I'm just ready. Can't get here soon enough. All right. Adam says, I still don't know why he left ECU because he felt like ECU did not put him in the position to get drafted. He had already been at ECU 4 years, got his degree. He wanted to try something else. And, hey, it's working thus far for him. And congrats. I don't have a problem with AMAC. And I think it'll be a fun atmosphere when the Pirates take on the Wolfpack. Donnie Run Pass Kirkpatrick says, my biggest concern with the team is the lack of overall power. I'm worried about running teams like State and Duke who score 10-plus a game. I mean, in the midweek, yeah, and I guess that is a concern when ECU is playing these teams in the midweek. Duke is nasty. I watched them today against Wake. Like, those are two high-level baseball teams. I will still take ECU at home against Duke any day of the week. I don't even know when Duke last won at ECU. Like, it's been a long time. So they got to come in here. They got to beat ECU in May or whenever. I do agree the lack of power isn't great, but I don't think this team – they're just not built on that, guys. They're built on pitching and more gap hitting / execution. And I don't know if there's a problem with that. It plays in the postseason to a degree. So, Wags, what's your take on that and maybe the perceived lack of power thus far?
Yeah, I think that's – you know, if I did have a concern about this team, that would probably be it. And I think just looking at the lineup as a whole – you're really comfortable 1 through 4, I would say. You got Riley Johnson leadoff, Carter Cunningham in the two hole, which teams need to stop pitching to Carter Cunningham. And then you have Star or JC in the 3-4, whichever way you want to put it. But then after that, it drops off. And you have Wilcox, and he's been a little inconsistent this year, but I think he's been better as of late. But this weekend, you really had Bristol Carter come through. And he might not be a power guy, but he adds length to your lineup. Ryan McChrystal got a hold of the ball this weekend, and I think you're going to start seeing more of McChrystal, and he's probably going to hit bottom of the order. So he brings some power, and I do think it's – we talked about weather earlier, you know, whether it's kind of rainy days or kind of like cold, windy days where the wind's not blowing out to right field in Clark Eclair Stadium. But once the weather warms up, and we talk about it every year, the balls are going to start flying a little bit more. I still don't think this team has as much natural power in their lineup. But, you know, I do think it'll improve as we go along a little bit. And, again, it just depends on who you're in the lineup. If Luke Nowak's in the lineup, you know, those types of guys, nothing against them at all. It's just that's not their game. They're going to hit the ball on the ground. They're going to put pressure on opposing defenses, and that's fine. But if you have McChrystal in there, then I think you have a little bit more potential for power. But I do agree, you know, going against teams like that, once you get into the postseason, you're going to have to score runs. And – you know, you have your Savage, you have Root at the front of the rotation, but that third game, that fourth game, or if one of them has a bad day, which one of them will have a bad day eventually, you're going to need to score runs. So I want to see not just power specifically, but just overall offensive execution from 5 through 9 in the lineup. I think this weekend there were definitely some highs and some lows, but I want to see more consistency 1 through 9. But I do think it's a little bit of a step down power-wise.
Scott, ECU to this point has played just as many games away from home as at home. And I do think with more home games, weaker opponents, you're going to see the ball start flying as it gets warmer, like Wag said. And I still don't think this is a huge home run team, but I expect those numbers to tick up. I also want to see more Colby Wallace, and I want to see more Cam Clonch. Cam Clonch, I get it. You know, it's tough for him to get in the lineup, but got to get some power in the lineup. Again, no offense to Nowak, Barini, Riley Johnson, but if you have all three of those guys in the lineup, basically you don't have home run threat in 33% of your lineup, realistically. Can they get a hold of one? Yeah, but it's not very likely. So, I don't know. What's your take on the power?
Yeah, but you scored 22 runs this weekend on just 6 extra base hits, and only one of those was a home run. And then you have guys like Bristol Carter, Colby Wallace, Ryan McChrystal that are getting consistent at bats for the first time, really, at this level. So, as they grow and develop, seeing Division I pitching, they'll start to perform better. But then maybe this is a controversial thing to say: is we don't coach to have big innings. We don't allow ourselves to have big innings sometimes because, you know, take Liberty for example. Today they get the first two guys on. And then they hit a 3-run home run, whereas we get the first two guys on, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but we bunt those guys up 9 times out of 10. And sometimes that leads to a 2-run inning. Sometimes it leads to a run, 1-run inning, but it usually leads to runs, whereas you don't bunt them over. Sometimes you get a 3-run bomb. Sometimes you get out of the inning with no runs. So it has stressed me looking around the scores around the country, I think Virginia had a 16-run inning this past week. And I just don't ever see us being a team that's going to put up a 10-run inning, a 12-run inning, even against weaker opponents, because we just don't really play that way. We don't play for the big innings, and we don't play to hit the 3-run home run. We play to grind you out a lot of the time. So hopefully that's not too controversial. But
I mean, it's the facts. I mean, you look at the fifth inning today, and it's just a difference in philosophy. I mean, look, ECU has had a ton of success with Cliff Godwin as coach. And I think, it's just part of baseball. Like, you can question the sack bunt. Like, in the fifth inning today, leadoff walk, I think it was McChrystal. You sack bunt him over, you're down two. And then Riley Johnson walks. And then two straight hits, and then they go with the sack bunt with a star to score the go-ahead run. So, like, you gave away two outs via the bunt. You still end up having a 3-run inning. But how big could that inning have been? Or if you don't sack bunt, do they feel less pressure and do they get out of the inning with no runs given up? So, like, you can say both ways. I think that's very fair. It's just, I think that's part of being a baseball fan. And look, we're year 10 of Cliff Godwin. I think we're going to continue to see this as long as he's the head coach. And ECU's had a lot of success. Look, if we ever have a watch along, Wags, and Scott, our takes on some of the bunts might be the real controversy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and again, just with the bunting, there's a time and a place for it. Like, it's part of baseball, and it's going to happen. You know, sacrifices are going to happen. I didn't hate it today personally. I think I might be the only one of us three that, you know, was okay with some of the bunts today. But then when you have, you know, Nowak bunting for a hit with two outs and trying to drag it down the first base side, you got to execute those if you're going to put the ball on the ground and not swing. So there's a time and a place for it. But, yeah, if we do a watch-along, we're going to have to censor ourselves, at least myself specifically, because there are some definitely times where I'm like, what the heck are we doing? And I don't say what the heck.
Yeah, Skull says, I wonder if Cliff would ever be able to coach in the SEC or they would boo him out of town for bunting so much. Yeah, that, I mean, that would definitely be some interesting takes. But also, if you win 40-plus games a year, you know, you live with it. And there's been great execution at times with the bunts. There's been poor, I think, for the most part. ECU does – I mean, they do getting teams' heads, guys, because, like, they have to respect the bunt so much. Even the fake bunts on the 2-0 counts, like, in all this mess – ECU will literally bunt in any situation. They could be up 10-1 in the ninth inning. They could bunt for a hit. Like, it's just one of those things they have to, that's ECU's philosophy. So it is what it is. All right. Bunny guys over. Kurt Cohn says, doesn't mean the 3-1 bomb can't happen. I mean, he's correct, but also you're giving away the out. And we've seen Carter Cunningham bunt, Jacob Starlin bunt, some of your best power guys. So, all right. Who has the least amount of power on this podcast panel? Home run power?
Definitely.
No offense, Wags. I'm going Wags.
Oh, it's definitely me. Look me up on Max Preps, 13-14. I hit like 077. There's a reason I stopped playing after sophomore year of high school. And I went to Pinecrest where all these guys, you know, Seth Cadell's, Colby Wallace's, Seth Maness, all these guys, there's a reason I stopped.
Well, maybe when we do our watch along, whenever that is, we've looked at UTSA weekend and, maybe we'll have a mini home run derby in addition.
Hey, wiffle ball's a different story. I've got a good wiffle ball swing.
Head up to Stalling Stadium so we can get a few out.
I've always wanted to go to, like a little league park or a softball park and just hit bombs, just so I can feel like I can drop bombs.
Yeah.
We got dad strength now, I go, so.
That is true. Wags is screwed. He's done. Let's see here. Will we ever see Igo on SportsCenter? Probably not, unless I'm getting hit in the nuts like Zach Maskovich that one time where he got hit in the nuts in a high school game.
Not top 10.
Yeah. There's been a lot of 3-0 swings for ECU this year. That, you know, Wags has made that point. I think we have seen a more aggressive team. It's just the bunts are still there. And Chad Alder says for the first out early in the game, he's not a fan of it. But ECU will play for an early run, and I don't – you know, I, again, I, I'm I guess it depends on the situation, but I don't hate it if you're in the first or second inning, you're just trying to get a lead, but it does lessen the chance of a big inning. I mean, you can look at the analytics. So I don't know. We could debate this stuff all day, Scott, but it kind of is what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do it now against teams we wouldn't necessarily have to do it against, so that when we get Texas at home in a super regional, we have the experience to get it down with your 3-4 guy. I mean, I think if we don't bunt as often, we have bigger innings more often. Personally, I'm not a big bunt guy. Not really even a big steal guy. Don't necessarily like putting guys in motion and risking outs, especially early in the game. But it's worked, and I'm not going to argue with success.
Lore Badger is a gorilla ball guy, confirmed. He wants to see the long ball.
I was hearing during Billy Godwin when we would hit balls in Charles Boulevard 5 times a game.
All right, a few more things. We'll get into our weekly predictions. I don't understand bunting with nobody on base, Sabres edge, pressure washing. I mean, at that point, you're just bunting for a hit, and it works sometimes. It looks great. It looks beautiful. When it doesn't, it's like the dumbest looking thing in the world. That's just part of bunting for a hit. Golf Yoda says, before we end it tonight, what are your thoughts on Star moving to cleanup and JJC? Yeah, he mentioned earlier, I meant to bring it up. Starling, guys, he had obviously the double. He would have had a home run on any other day with the ball. He crushed a ball to left, and the wind was blowing like 30 miles an hour crosswind, so it knocked it down. He also had a great at-bat in whatever inning it was with two guys on base, fouled a bunch of balls off. So Starling, I think, is coming around. And any thoughts on y'all from the fact that they just flip-flopped JC and Starling in the order? Does that change anything for y'all, Wags?
Yeah, and I think Starling had a big, I believe, 2 RBI double today, going opposite field too, going with the wind. So that was really nice to see. But, yeah, I thought he had a good weekend. He looked more comfortable at the plate. But lineup-wise specifically, I would love if there was someone else you would trust in that cleanup spot. Maybe move Starling down to the five-hole just to lengthen that lineup a little bit more like we were talking about. That's just a thought in my head. You know, I predict the lineup every single game we play. I write it down on a sticky note. I text some of them to you guys, and I stop when I think I'm being annoying. But, you know, I like messing around with lineups. But right now I just think, like I said earlier, you have your top four, and then after that it's just nobody you really trust yet to be in that 3-4 hole. But, you know, I'm fine either way with Starling 3 or 4, JC 3 or 4. I think it just depends on not only what hand the other pitcher's throwing with, but, you know, what kind of stuff does he have. If he's a, you know, kind of a junky guy, then maybe move Starling up to the 3 and try to get that bat that's probably a little more comfortable against that more at-bats in the game. But I didn't think – I'm okay either way. I'll just leave it at that.
Scott, do you have any take on this or any lineup construction you'd like to see differently?
Yeah, I think you need Star somewhere between 3 and 5 just to break up the lefties. If you can get Bristol Carter to the point where you trust him at the top of the lineup, then I think you could see – Bristol Carter at in the 2-hole, Carter Cunningham at 3, JJC at 4, Starling at 5. And I think that would be a very successful lineup. But without Star, we don't have a right-handed threat right now that I trust in the top 5 of our batting order.
Fair points. All right. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything here before we get to our predictions. When will Wags and Lore Badger get passes to all games like Igo does?
I got one.
Wags has one. He just is too busy wanting to watch UNC baseball.
Incorrect. Hold on.
When's the last ECU baseball game you showed up to?
The last ECU game I went to was, I guess it was in Chapel Hill.
What a surprise.
But I've only been to 2 baseball games this year. But hey, my ECU press pass is right on the door over there that's open. Like I said, maybe this weekend. I was eyeing Friday potentially as a return to the press box so we can have these conversations in person.
Wow. Wags in the press box.
Not official.
I'm looking at it. Ain't no way you're showing up for your press debut against Columbia. All right. Did Wags go to the Canes game tonight? I assume not, since they dominated.
No, so I did not. I was working earlier, so unfortunately I was not there. But fortunately, they won. I know I'm bad luck, so I'll be there Tuesday, though. So when they lose to the Rangers in a big game, blame me.
By the way, Scott, if you want to get a press pass, let me know. Now, you do – you will have to behave yourself in the press box. Think you can handle it?
No. I don't want to be a part of the fake news media like you two. No.
Oh, God. We'll have to shut it down.
No, I'm actually – I think I'm going to come Saturday this week, but I'll be bringing my family. It's not often that I am at a game solo, so it would not benefit the wife for me to leave her to be in the press box while she watches both our kids and a baseball game that she has more interest in some but less interest than most in.
Hey, it's a nice excuse to have her watch the kids for a few hours. So, but I understand. All right, our weekly check-in from Brandon Carr. He says, "I go, great show." Thank you to Wags and Scott as well. They make the show. I'm just here. And he says, "I lobbied very hard last year for Scott to finally get a shirt. Can I get one? 3XL, please." I'm guessing he's asking about a Hoist the Colors shirt. I will try my best to get you one. Are you going to be at the spring game, Brandon? If so, maybe I'll drop one there. Scott, I can't make out your shirt tonight. My first thought was Cactus Jack when I seen Bang. We'll get to that in a second. Wags, I won't insinuate about you being a Carolina fan. Yeah, we've already done that. All right. What's your shirt?
We got a Joey Votto shirt. You know, he just signed with the Blue Jays. So, what, 22 years with the Reds overall? So, I had to celebrate him today. One of my favorite baseball players of all time.
Joey Votto in his native land, the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll see if he makes the roster. Sabres as Preston Washington says, "Scott, come see us out in left field. The kids will love the jungle." I'm sure you spent a lot of time in the jungle. I had my kid out there the other week. Fun but chaotic, man. You can't really watch the game, Scott, because you're worried your kids might get ran over.
Well, I have a 17-month-old, so he struggles to get around in the jungle. So my daughter has spent some time out there. She had a lot of fun just running around, getting muddy. But we'll see where we end up this weekend.
All right. I think that'll do it for the comments. Let's make our predictions on the coming week, our bowl predictions as well, as we said earlier. Scott, notch one in the bowl prediction category. He is now in the – win, what was it, the win tally?
Tally mark.
He's in the win tally mark column. I've got two Wags with a goose egg, but hey, it's early. I think there's still like 11 weeks left in the regular season. I was tallying it today. Kaysen says, "Who's sitting for the cycle this week?" Kaysen, how about you go rank some damn teams and do a good job for once?
Shout out to USC Upstate. Yeah. Future top eight.
Go Spartans. That's what they're the Spartans, right?
Yeah.
All right. Who wants to start it off? Prediction and bold pick.
I'm over. Yeah. I'm gonna get mine out of the way because I'm changing my fortune this week. All right. I'll start with my weekly prediction. UNCW at UNCW. We've talked about it before, but that just always seems to be a frustrating game. I don't know why I have this feeling. Not this year. Win that one. You sweep Columbia. I think you beat the crap out of Columbia. I think the offense is going to come through. The power is going to come through this weekend, I think. Weather permitting, of course. I haven't looked at that. But so I'm predicting a 4-0 week. And for my bold prediction, I think Bristol Carter, he started off this week with an extra base hit. And I think you're going to see more. And I'm debating on the number of extra base hits I'm going to predict him to have, but I'm going to go with three. Three extra base hits for Bristol Carter this week.
That is bold. Well done, Scott.
I'm going to go 3-1. My family is among the worst luck in all of East Carolina sports, so I do not trust us to win any game that I attend or that my children attend. So Look for us on Saturday to somehow lose 2-1 to a team that gave up 80 runs in four games this past weekend. Bold prediction is East Carolina will enter the top 10 after next week's results are final. There will be enough teams lose in front of us to where we will jump in to the top 10.
All right. I like it. By the way, the weather for Wilmington, guys, on Tuesday, 70 degrees, the high, sunny, low of 40. And the weather this coming weekend, that's Wilmington. I need to change it to Greenville. Hopefully it's just as promising for Greenville. I am looking this up live. Yeah, man, high of 78 on Friday, high of 69, nice on Saturday, high of 71 Sunday. So the ball is going to be flying out of Clark LeClaire. And we are going to see two ECU Pirates hit their first career homers. Not one, but two. Colby Wallace and Bristol Carter. It will be one of Wags's three extra base hits. And look, Columbia just gave up 80 runs. So I'm hoping that they bring that same pitching staff to Greenville and everybody on the team hits a homer. So I'm going with that for my bold prediction. Colby Wallace and Bristol Carter hit homers, first career bombs. And I guess I didn't give a prediction. I'm going 3-1. UNCW, ECU's got to go up there and win. They got to prove to me they can do it. I think they sweep Columbia. I'm going 3-1. And that's all I got. So 4-0 for Wags, 3-1, 3-1.
Yep. And I've got to say, I thought about going for someone who hit their first career home run. That was my original plan for bold prediction, but I pivoted. So you're welcome.
Let it be known, too, I was going to go one, and then I'm like, I don't think it's bold enough. So do I get 1.5 if I hit both?
I'll give you that.
Yeah, no, I'll take one. All right, guys, we got to get out of here. It's technically, it's really only 9:10. We could go another hour with the early daylight saving time. How stupid is that, by the way? Can we just stick to one time?
Let's stick to this time. This is the time that we like.
Just stick to this time.
We should just be starting right now.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Let's run it back. All right. College umpires suck.
A guy, Bruce Willis, is here, a.k.a. Lucy Jones.
Oh, man. Lucy Jones has entered the chat. That means it's time for us to exit the chat. All right. We will be back next Sunday night, 9 o'clock, hopefully recapping a successful week for ECU baseball. And by the way, wanted to give a heads up. Looking like we're going to have Trey Savage and Zach Root on Hoist the Colors tomorrow at 12 noon on 94.3 The Game. So tune in for that, as we're going to get Zach Root on the show. At least that's the plan. We'll confirm it in the morning. But all right, guys, for Scott Lorbacher, for Jonathan Wagner,
who didn't lag out today.
You didn't. I almost
broke
forgot.
My streak.
Partial lag today. Not a full lag.
Just a partial lag. What you should have done is just froze here at the end and act like you were, but really just you were
just
frozen.
Just pause my video.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, we made it an hour plus. Wags, Scott, I'm Steven Igo. This has been the Hoist the Colors podcast. We'll see you guys next Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Peace out.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.